Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mia Bloom, a professor of Women's Studies and International Studies at Pennsylvania State University and a fellow at the International Center for the Study of Terrorism. She has advanced degrees in both Arab and Russian studies and speaks eight languages. She's the author of the critically acclaimed book Dying to Kill, The Allure of Suicide Terror. Her latest book is Bombshell, Women and Terror, and she's currently completing a book called Gendercide, The Strategic Logic of Rape During War, and is looking into the increasing role of the use of children in terrorism. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mia Bloom.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you for having me.
And clearly the French Algerian who was killed today by a police sniper, apparently he had they'd thrown a bunch of stun grenades into the apartment. He'd been holed up in for about 32 hours or something. And then the police came in and they were met with a barrage of fire from him. Three police were wounded. And then he tried to get out the back window and was shot by a police sniper. I think he was still firing as he went out the back window. But what I think is extraordinary about this story is the brutality of this man, that he shot those young kids, those eight-year-old girls, right up. He literally put the gun right up to their head and shot them at point-blank range. And he's saying he's doing that in the name of the Palestinian children. I mean, that's pretty hard to take, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think part of what we're seeing is all of a sudden now a number of groups are trying to claim responsibility for Murrah. And they're saying, oh, he was one of us. And so I think part of what we're seeing is a media circus going on, not just to try to ascertain what motivated him, but also within the jihadi world, who gets to claim responsibility, who gets to link up with him after the fact. But who
would want to, though, Mia? Why would anybody want to be associated with that such wanton cruelty towards innocent children?
Well, what they do is very often, and it's one of the reasons why you see in the pre-attack videos, let's say for a suicide bomber, you'll see the logo of the organization in the background. You'll see some post-production to the video as well, making sure you've got the logo several times throughout the video to ensure that the group that did it actually gets, quote-unquote, credit. Because we've had a number of instances when as many as four different groups would try to claim responsibility for an attack, because from their perspective, this shows that the group is proactive, it gets them on the radar screen, and within the jihadi world, they can get credit. But at the same time, we're also seeing different divisions within the jihadi and Salafi world with regard to children. It could be that attacking children is going too far. The reaction after the Beslan attacks, for instance, in Russia, were very negative, and even some of the terrorist groups now have voiced their opposition to Murrah's attack in Toulouse. So I think we're going to see different interpretations and as well as different reactions to this horrible attack.
And which groups have distanced themselves from Murrah's attack, killings?
Interestingly enough, a number of the Palestinian groups and the Palestinian Authority itself has come out against Murrah's attack. But the group that is allegedly part of AQIM in the Maghreb, an al-Qaeda affiliate called Jund al-Khalifa, has said now that Murrah was one of theirs. Another group in France, Force Annalisa, Knights of Glory, has also claimed affiliation with Murrah and his brother. So we're seeing the differences emerge now over this one attack.
Well, but the Palestinian Authority is not a terrorist group. What about Hamas? What have they responded?
Hamas has, depending on who you speak to, Hamas has voiced opposition to the attack. Although, again, part of the problem is, as we're getting these reports, we're getting really contradictory information. So, in general, you could make an argument that no matter what you think about the underlying motivations and grievances of the different groups, attacking children is going too far. But there are some people that will come forward and say, well, no, if this is defensive jihad, if this is a jihad in which Islam is being attacked from all around, then women can get involved and children can get involved, and no one is immune.
Well, what do you know, Mia Bloom, about Maras' brother, Abdel Qaeda? I mean, he supposedly was running an underground railroad for jihadis going to fight the Americans in Iraq.
Yeah, so he was involved in internet recruitment. And we see a lot of this in Europe, whether it's in Belgium with a woman who's been arrested, Malika Arud, in Italy, Barbara Farina. There's been a number of internet-based jihadis whose role it is to use propaganda and to try to get people to go to Iraq on the jihad or to Afghanistan. And a lot of times, the websites use language that talk about the need to defend Muslim women, that their sisters in Islam are being attacked, they're being raped by U.S. and British and NATO soldiers, and that the men need to step up and go to these countries to protect their sisters. Otherwise, they're not manly and they're not doing their duty.
Well, apparently Mohammed Merah went twice to Afghanistan and Pakistan in November of 2010 and in August of 2011. And on his return from Pakistan on the second trip, he was called into questioning by French intelligence agencies. Since you study both terrorism and terrorists, Mia Bloom, what's your sense of how the French are handling this? It would seem to me the DCRI is the relevant agency, I guess the equivalent of the FBI. But it would seem to me that this wouldn't. I'd find it hard to believe that this could ever happen in America. That I could believe the part that a jihadi, if that's indeed what he is, could get weapons. We know that you can buy weapons. In fact, I think one of Al-Qaeda's handbooks, they said, you know, don't bring weapons into America. You can buy them easily at gun stores. He had body armor. Those things, I think, are hard to get in France. That's kind of another question I have. But do you think, give me your sense of a comparison between how the U.S. would have handled this and how the French appear to have handled this?
Well, I mean, you could make a comparison between Merah and Faisal Shahzad, who was a Times Square bomber, in terms of this notion of going to other countries and getting training and still being under the radar screen. I think when Merah was called in, at least from the reports that I've seen, he made claims that he was just there as a tourist and provided photos that, you know, he was going to various places and taking vacation photos.
And to get a wife, apparently, too. He said he was going to get a wife.
He was looking for a wife, which may or may not be sort of the thing to do, although one would imagine it would make more sense had he gone to Morocco or Algeria to find a wife there. But they believed him. And we can take this, we can interpret this in two ways. One, as we can question whether or not the French security forces dropped the ball, whether they missed something. Or maybe another way of looking at it is, here you have someone who is clearly disturbed, someone who has definite mental issues, and perhaps we are making these linkages after the fact because he himself wanted to make himself bigger than he actually was. He was basically a juvenile delinquent. He'd been arrested 15 times, all for petty crimes. I mean, he wasn't a really big fish in all of this. And yet, you know, if he's making these linkages to Al-Qaeda, that makes him much more important after the fact.
And but there's still a lot of things. Well, let me ask you about the other question I raised, though, about how did this guy get all this heavy weaponry and body armor?
This is actually something that has not been adequately reported. It's been reported on some news sources that he brought them back from the regions, and other news sources that he was acquiring them more locally. So I don't honestly know. There is something interesting that did come up. Apparently, 2 hours before the siege started, someone, maybe Merah, made a phone call to France news agency, their equivalent of CNN, which is called France 24, and spoke for 11 minutes to their senior news editor, Abba Kalando. Apparently, in the conversation with Kalando, the person, who may or may not have been Merah, gave detailed information about videotaping the murders, how many guns he used, whether he lost cartridges, how many bullets he'd actually used. So we have some information potentially as a result of that phone call. But in that phone call, again, Kalanda says he was very calm, very collected. He made his points, but he didn't sound like an insane person. Yet most people who are lone actors, most people who are engaging in activities like this, definitely there's something wrong with them, and they are really desperate individuals in need of help.
Well, this is after this happened Tuesday night. This is after this person had shot those young girls in the head at point-blank range, these 3 8-year-old girls.
Well, there were 2 boys and a little girl. But
one
of the things that hasn't been reported very, very well has been the majority of the paratroopers that he killed at the outset, you know, because he started his killing spree on the 11th. 3 of the 4 paratroopers he killed were also North African. 2 were Muslim, 1 was Christian. And again, so here he is, allegedly a jihadi, killing other Muslims who happen to be in the French military. And again, if you go by the strictest interpretation of the Quran, you're not supposed to kill other Muslims. You're not supposed to kill civilians. You're definitely not supposed to kill children. So here he is violating all the major tenets, even of the strictest interpretation of the Salafi ideology.
And he's still claiming to be a member of Al-Qaeda, but isn't that the way it works? You know, anybody can claim it. It's an open franchise.
Anyone can claim it, and in fact, sometimes they can claim it. It's not true, but if they engage in an act that gets a lot of attention, and media attention in particular, Al-Qaeda may turn around and claim them. Because, you know, it's a freebie for them. They didn't actually have to do anything, and they are able to reap the rewards of the media attention. You know, whether it's Al-Qaeda or any other terrorist group all over the world, you know, Maggie Thatcher used to say, the media is the lifeblood of the terrorist organization. Without the media reporting all these events, terrorists would not exist. So, in fact, this is something that feeds the terrorist machine, is having this media attention. So when they engage in brutal activities, killing women, killing children, engaging in suicide bombing against a mosque, these are the things that are going to get them the most attention.
Well, I think your point's well taken, Mia Bloom, that he said, I think whether it was to the police or to this anchor with France 24 television, he said that he was going to bring France to its knees. He certainly didn't bring France to his knees, but in terms of the media, he did in a sense. I mean, it's all about the media, isn't it? It's how much you can capture.
It's definitely about the media, and especially the timing during the course of a French campaign, which has been quite intense and nasty. You can imagine the same thing happening in this country leading up to the next election. These are the kinds of things that every different politician in France is taking a position. And Marine Le Pen, who's the daughter of the senior Le Pen, who is a rabid racist and xenophobe, has capitalized on this attack.
Yeah, she said that Sarkozy has dangerously underestimated the threat of Islamic fundamentalism, and clearly this will be a. I mean, I talked to a French reporter yesterday about it, about whether it would be a campaign issue, how they handled it. I don't know what the post-mortem is on the handling of this. They were apparently trying to get this guy alive. I guess they decided it wasn't worth it. After he wounded 3 more police, they must have decided it wasn't worth it, right?
No, actually, no. He had lulled them into a false sense by saying he was going to give himself up. That's how they got into the apartment in the first place.
Oh, I see.
And then as soon as the paratroopers got in, he started shooting like crazy and then emerged from the bathroom window shooting the gun as he jumped out the windows. And again, people would refer to this as suicide by police. Clearly, he knew this was the end. But he had lied to them, I guess it was about a half an hour before, saying, no, I'm going to give myself up peacefully. They had tried to get his mother to end the siege, and people who knew him, people who were friends with him. And so I think at this point, he had nothing left. So he just thought he would go out, you know, in a blaze of glory.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Mia Bloom.
Ian, thank you so much for having me.
Again, Mia Bloom, Professor of Women's Study and International Studies at Pennsylvania State University, a fellow at the International Center for the Study of Terrorism. She's the author of Dying to Kill, The Allure of Suicide Terror, and her latest book is Bombshell, Women and Terror. So what do we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with John Dean, the former White House counsel to Richard Nixon, the guy that basically put Nixon out of business. He's an expert on the Supreme Court, and we talked about the ruling that came down about plea bargaining, which the conservatives thought was a terrible idea because it somehow ties the hands of prosecutors so they can't con people into plea bargains. And fortunately, the swing vote on the court, Anthony Kennedy, recognized that since 97% of federal cases are plea bargained and 94% of state cases are plea bargained, that this is the new reality and that we have to deal with it. It shows you how ideological the four conservatives are who voted against it, in the sense that they're living in a right-wing fantasy land. And then we talked about the Keystone XL pipeline, the southern part that was approved today or announced today by President Obama in Cushing, Oklahoma. He's on an energy tour around the country. I asked Jamie Henn, who along with Bill McKibben, the founders of 350.org, they've been fighting this pipeline from the beginning. And obviously, you know, majority of the public in America support this pipeline. They've drunk the drill, baby, drill Kool-Aid. He thinks that there's a way to turn it around, and he's determined to demonstrate and to organize and to get the word out and eventually change people's mind, because he believes the whole thing's a huge scam. It has nothing to do with energy independence. In fact, it's going to probably eventually cause a rise in gas, because it's all about exporting gas, not about domestic consumption. And also I asked him why wasn't the president in this opportunity he has to take on the energy issue, which makes him very vulnerable because of the Republicans are trying to use this as their main issue in this election campaign, why he didn't bring up the issue of the speculation on Wall Street. And I'm afraid Jamie didn't have an answer. It still, frankly, mystifies me. Then we spoke with Mia Bloom, who's an expert on terrorism and terrorists, to try and get a sense of the methods and motivation of this alleged al-Qaeda French Algerian terrorist who'd killed these three children, a rabbi and three paratroopers, who were shot dead today by a police sniper after he'd wounded three more police officers. She talked about how in many ways this has crossed a line in terms of killing children, and a number of terrorist groups around the world have distanced themselves from this guy. At the same time, a whole bunch of them have wanted to join on the bandwagon and put their logo on these videos. And apparently this guy filmed all of the murders of these young children. He shot them right up close, put a gun right up to their head. He was carrying a camera when he did all of this. So I hate to think, I dread the thought of it, but I'm absolutely convinced that this mayhem will end up on television. And after all, the whole thing was a television event. Without the media, the terrorists would be nothing. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.